Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology, conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich, and we're so glad that you could join us for episode 101. And on that note, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who signed up for the Podcast 100 giveaway as we speak. The thing will be over by now when you guys are listening to this episode, but as of this moment, there's something like close to 1,300 entries. So that could be depressing to many of you, thinking of your 3 out of 1,300 chances to, you know, to win. But to us, it's exciting just in terms of the engagement and the people who are involved. And I guess as we think about, you know, doing this down the road in the future, we're going to maybe have to add a few giveaways, because I don't know if we even kind of expected this response. And I think so far since we started, there's something like close to 40 more reviews in iTunes, and it's at like 175 right now. And we're hoping that to get that to 200. And even if you didn't get a chance to, once this giveaway is over, we're certainly grateful for those of you that continue to go over to iTunes and other places and leave a review. It's huge. And we feel deeply blessed. My mom was even telling me that I think a few days ago, she went through, and at that time it was something like 160 of them. She went through and read all 160 of them, and said she was just touched by those. I don't know if she made any comments to you, Dad, about that.
Oh yeah, she was very affected by it, and I said to her, you know, it wasn't too many months before that I had come across those, because I think you were getting them and I wasn't. You know, I was depressed. I was seeing a psychiatrist because no one was responding to our podcast, and you told me, "No, Dad." I'm joking, of course, but we were both deeply moved. I mean, just almost breathless a little bit, because it touches us to see the engagement of so many. And when you hear people say, "We've listened to all 80. We in the last 3 months, we went through it. You're driving the car, working out." So it's
one guy again the other day said he started at the beginning and listened to all 100. You know, went through all 100.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just such a blessing to us. And I thought, Jonathan, there's no reason why we can't, if our listeners really do like this idea of awards and surprises. I mean, you know, from our end, that's easy to do. I mean, we love doing that. We don't want to do things that aren't going to be meaningful, but you responded so well to this. And if it's really kind of fun, if it's kind of fun to, you know, win something and continue to do this, I want to do this more, because if it's meaningful to you, it certainly has been meaningful to us. So Jonathan and I will be putting our heads together to do more of this, because you certainly let people know about it. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, a woman just emailed a little while ago and said she's been trying to put a review in iTunes and she just couldn't get it to work. And so she, you know, she emailed it to us. And, you know, again, that's just, it's powerful to us as we continue to go through this and go towards, you know, 200 and beyond. So we'll continue to put out content. Thank you for that. We know some of you have continued to support us via donations as we put out this podcast on the blog, you know, for free. It's kind of the halfway mark of the year. If you haven't looked in our app, we've got an easy way to donate well and to support the hours and effort that goes into this. And so we're thank you to those of you that have done that, and others of you that have done this with your words inside of iTunes, inside Amazon, on our store. This helps people when they arrive organically and don't know what love and respect is, and they hear your testimony and they hear your words and they say, my marriage, my relationship, my family can be changed as well. I don't think you quite will understand how this deeply impacts people when they see people that have gone through the material. So thank you. But transitioning to the next 100 episodes, beginning with episode 101, My Response is My Responsibility, Part 2. And we started with Part 1 last week. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, by all means, go back and do so. loveandrespectpodcast.com, iTunes. You can find that via our blog as well, and other app feeders as well, including our own app, which is approaching 20,000 downloads. So again, grateful for everybody that's participating. But I'll turn it over to you, Dad. Part two of My Response is My Responsibility.
Yeah, and that is the point of this two-part podcast. And the phrase goes like this: my response is my responsibility, and we all hate it. And then the second, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's not necessarily a syllogistic, you know, thing, but in some ways it is. You don't cause me to be the way I am. You reveal the way I am. Therefore, if my response is wrong, then, you know, it's my issue, and I really can't blame it on you, though I'm going to try every which way I can. You know, a husband wrote me about his relationship with his wife. He says, a quote I originally took issue with in Love and Respect was, she doesn't cause me to be the way I am. She reveals the way I am. If I react in an unloving way, then it reveals I still have issues going on inside of me. He said, I first hated that statement. Well, welcome to the crowd of all of us that hate that statement. So he says, I first hated that statement as I took a totally different approach to the realization that if she was this way, then I'd be that way. In other words, she was causing him to react negatively. But what I quickly came to realize was I was responsible for my reaction, regardless, in capital letters, regardless of what came my way, both in marriage and in life. And he caught it. And it is, at first, intimidating, but as we've been pointing out, it's quite liberating when you stop and think about it. In fact, Jonathan, read what that one woman who watched the Love and Respect conference wrote in a blog that she has.
She said, one of the themes was, my response is my responsibility. No matter what is done or said to you or about you and yours, to your face, behind your back, expected or unexpected, it's not the person or the words that cause us to react in a negative way. The person or the words don't cause us to be shocked, angry, hurt, bitter, etc. Those are choices we make. The person or the incident does not cause us to act the way we do. It reveals the way that we are. So ask yourself, what is it that will spill out?
Mm-hmm. And I want to insert grace here. As we said, there are amoral reactions, or what we call involuntary reactions. I mean, sometimes we're going to be hurt, sad. I mean, if you hit my thumb with a hammer, I'm going to scream. I mean, that's an involuntary knee-jerk reaction, like the doctor who hits my knees with that little, you know, tool or device, and my knee jerks up. I mean, there is the knee-jerk reaction. So we've all got to be honest. Come on.
So there's an emotional response here, right? That if somebody says something incredibly cruel and mean to us, or hurt will be experienced, even anger will be experienced, but what we do with that is the key.
Yeah, I would say, you know, when she used the word shocked, I mean, if we see, you know, somebody run over by a car, we're going to be in shock. I mean, that's not, you know, oh, I shouldn't really be shocked by that. So we have to put the category of involuntary emotion, and all of us have to then be honest with ourselves. You know what? That is involuntary. But we then have to go beyond that and say, wait a minute, if I become a bitter person, if I'm always having this outburst of anger, if I'm, you know, making a coarse gesture towards somebody who, you know, drives in front of me, I mean, it's, you know, not telling them they're number one, but suggesting they're something else, then we've got to own up to that as our issue. And so it's the area of the conscience that each of us has to get in tune with. The problem is that we can sear that conscience. We can come to a point where we're not in tune with our own rage, you know, or the rageaholic, or the road rage, and all these things that we kind of know on the far extremes. We lose touch with it. And but if we begin to say, you know what, hey, I'm not doing myself any good here, and if I really do have a control here, is this something that's going to shame me when I own up to this, or is this ultimately something that's going to liberate me? And we are taking the position that when we own up to our reactions, we are then making the statement, you can't control me ultimately. You're not my God. You're not some dictator over my inner world. I am free within. I'm free within. You can't make me hate you. You can't make me have contempt toward you. You can hurt me, yes, but you're not going to end up causing me to become a bitter person because you have issues. I'm not going to be an unhappy person because you're always doing whatever. I'm going to have a sense of joy within my heart, contentment, independent of circumstances. Now, none of us are going to do that perfectly. Good grief. I mean, we're sinners. We're imperfect people. But some of us have not locked into this. And so what we do is we try to change everybody around us to perform at a level that's acceptable to us so that we'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And that proves to be, that will lead to this victim status.
And I know that you're going to kind of give a couple examples here, but I also wanted to read just a few quotes from Viktor Frankl again, which we read last time, just kind of as a reminder to people of kind of what we're thinking about. And I think he puts them in nice, pithy ways. Is it okay if I do that?
Yes, please. And again, Viktor Frankl was imprisoned during the Nazi regime. He was a prisoner of war in those concentration camps. I don't know how many years. And he later became a psychiatrist, if I recall correctly, and gave voice to the meaning of life and the purpose of life. But I think we said last time, he observed people in prison. Some, you know, were not dealing with it. And others were survivors, and it really raised the question, what is it that caused some people to have an inner freedom, and other people, though they were behind barbed wire fences, were even more enslaved to their inner world?
Yeah, so that's a great reminder. The person who is making these statements and wrote the famous book, Man's Search for Meaning and Logotherapy, he was a concentration camp survivor during the Holocaust. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. I'll read two more. The one thing you can't take away from me is the way I choose to respond to what you do to me. The last of one's freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given circumstance. And the last one. Forces beyond, I'll read another one. Sorry, wrong one. Our greatest freedom is the freedom to choose our attitude. Our greatest freedom is the freedom to choose our attitude.
And this isn't dismissing the evil that comes at us. This is why Viktor Frankl is so powerful, because there's intrinsic evil out there. And we're not saying that a person can't control us physically. They can torture us. They can kill us. And we started our last session on that with the Frenchman who was captured by the Nazis. And you can listen to that to get that point, which is a powerful one and deeply affected me. So again, we're not saying the people around us are not doing things wrong and that we're somehow then concluding, oh, it must be my problem. I'm reacting as though, you know, they're wrong when in fact they're not wrong. I'm the one that's wrong. No. We're saying, how do we deal with their bad behavior toward us? And do they ultimately determine our inner world? And the answer is absolutely not. We are free within. And that is a very liberating point that Frankl is making. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing that I sometimes offer at our conferences. You know, I have a question I ask people, and I want you to understand the metaphor of some sorts. But I talk about a grain of sand, and that grain of sand gets in your eye. And at first, it causes, you know, irritation. And then, if not cared for, infection. And if you keep that there for a long time, rubbing or whatever, I mean, you take it out for months, you could lose your vision. I mean, it could damage the eye. Now, suppose that same speck of sand gets in an oyster. Well, we all know that it's an irritant. It creates irritation, and then it leads to what is referred to, as I understand it, concretion. And then it produces what? We all shout out, a pearl. Now, the question that I always ask is, did the sand cause the results in the human eye? Did the sand cause the results in the oyster? The answer is no. I mean, if the answer were yes, then the next time you get sand in your eye, you know, a pearl's going to pop out. But we all know that's stupid. We're smarter than that one. So it really then points this out. The sand is just an irritant that reveals the inner properties of the human eye. And it's an irritant that reveals the inner properties of the oyster. And then I always like to say this, you're married to an irritant. And everybody goes nuts. You know, everybody starts laughing because it's, you know, and that doesn't mean now the application is you go home tonight and say, I found out today that I married an irritant. And no wonder you're having problems. But the point is well taken, I hope. I mean, I also talk about a rose or a skunk. You know, if you stand on the rose, right, and you smash it down, you put pressure on it, there's this aroma that ascends to the nostrils that's delicious. There's a skunk over there. I'm going to step on the skunk. Oh, there's an aroma there too. Now it raises the question, did I cause the rose to smell like a rose when I stepped on it? Did I cause the skunk to smell like a skunk when I stepped on it? No. The pressure I put on that rose and pressure I put on the skunk, you know, revealed the inner properties. It didn't cause those inner properties to be there. It revealed it. So you're getting the drift. My response is my responsibility. You don't cause me to be the way I am. You reveal the way I am. And I also talk about, hey, look, you know, how is it that the sun in the sky melts the butter but hardens the clay? How does the sun know to melt the butter and harden the clay? The sun doesn't know anything like that. The sun is heat, and it's revealing the inner properties of the clay, and it's revealing the inner properties of the butter. And so, you know, the question I ask, are you irritated? Are you under pressure? Are you feeling the heat? And when that happens, do we blame others? Do we scream, you know, Emerson, I wouldn't lose perspective. I wouldn't stink at everything I do and have these meltdowns and become so hardened if people treated me with love and respect. I mean, these people around me caused me to be miserable. And after all, and Emerson, you know this, when they love me and respect me, I'm happy, man. So it's got to be that my response is their responsibility, and I've made a decision to live my life that way, and I'm going to point out to everybody they need to be responsible for my responses, because when I'm unhappy, they're to blame. Now, of course, when I'm happy, really, really, really happy, I'm not going to give them too much credit for that. But certainly on the negative side, I'm going there with it. And that is the mindset that some people have. But Jonathan, let's look at some of the responses we've had of people who have written me, who have said, actually, you know what? That phrase, my response is my responsibility, has revolutionized my life. I mean, would you quote that businesswoman who wrote?
She wrote, my response, a businesswoman told her employer that her favorite quote was, my response is my responsibility by Dr. Emerson Eggerich. She then said, I learned this quote a few years ago, and it is applicable in almost every area of my life. Even if I can't control the words, actions, or situations around me, I can control how I respond to them. This quote has seriously changed my life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she said it so well. I mean, the truth is we can't control other people's words. We can't control their actions. Not absolutely. I mean, we can't do it 100% of the time. We can't control all the situations around us. So when we're in those situations, you know, are we blowing a gasket? Are we internally bitter? Maybe we're not the extrovert who blows up, but internally we're just, you know, churning inside because of this mistreatment. And again, the mistreatment's real. But the question at the end of the day is, have we come to a point where, you know what, that's their issue. That's their issue. It's not my issue. And that doesn't mean they don't affect me, but they certainly don't control me. And there's a huge difference between those two aspects. This idea applies to every area of life. Read that next comment, Jonathan, if you would.
Another commented, my response is my responsibility. It's like a universal phrase covering a multitude of situations and relationships. Don't you agree? I see it easily applied to traffic and road rage. I see it fitting parent-child interactions. I see it applying to rude people's comments in grocery stores or being cut off in line.
Mm-hmm. It was a blogger that was making that statement. That's exactly right. It at first, you know, it's kind of, oh man, I don't know if I want to own up to this. But at the end of the day, I'm free. I am free. I'm free from your misbehaviors. Again, you stepped on my toe and it hurt, but that doesn't mean I'm going to hate you. I'm not going to, you know, go that way. I'm moving on. I got too much in front of me. I'm moving forward. I'm getting on beyond this. Read what this mother wrote.
She wrote, we say a phrase in our house all the time. My kids could quote it for you. My response is my responsibility. Sometimes I don't choose what happens. I didn't make the actions, decisions, or cause the events, but I still must live with the consequences. This is where I do have a choice. This is where my response to life is totally up to me, my responsibility. It is amazing what pressure is released and what freedom is experienced when we begin to own our own actions and our decisions.
Wow. Wow. And see, again, we're conceding the fact. She says, you know, I didn't make the actions. I didn't make the decisions. I didn't cause the events. I mean, so we're conceding the fact that at some level we are victims, right? I mean, in that regard. externally, so to speak. And she says, I have to live with the consequences of the bad things other people do. But then she catches it. This is where I do have a choice. This is this true freedom of choice. We've preached freedom of choice in this culture until it comes to a point of being responsible. We're all about rights in this culture, and we're, in some ways, we're going under because we're losing sight of what made this nation great, and that was, I'm going to be responsible for my own actions and reactions. You know, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. Humpty Dumpty was pushed. That's the mindset of some people in this culture. But then she got it. She said, it is amazing what pressure is released, and there's the word, and what freedom is experienced when we begin to own our own actions and our decisions. So many people would say that's contradictory. They would say that's silly, but it's really not. It is not. It really is the means of personal freedom. What about this man who heard me teach, "My response is my responsibility," from our video series?
I mean, he said, we live in a world where nobody seems to take responsibility for their own actions. People increasingly seem to want to blame others for the way they act, blame their parents, their teachers, their pastors, their leaders, the boss, and sometimes even their spouse for the poor decisions they have made. But ultimately, we all have a choice. My response is my responsibility. How I respond when I feel hurt is my responsibility. This is a mark of maturity. I can choose to do the loving thing even when I feel disrespected. Nobody can make me not do what God has called me to do. Nobody can make me treat another individual in a wrong way. That is a choice I make.
Wow. Wow. I mean, he got it, and he was applying it here in his marriage, because we talk about the crazy cycle. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love, based on Ephesians 5:33. And the default mechanism for some people immediately is, well, that's why we're on the crazy cycle, because my husband is so unloving. That's why I'm reacting disrespectfully. And many husbands say, well, that gets it. You caught it in a nutshell there, Emerson. The reason that I'm so unloving is because she's so disrespectful. Instead of saying, whoa, 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 whoa. Whatever they fail to be isn't causing me to fail. I can still be obedient to God. I can do what God calls me to do independent of them. They cannot coerce me to disobey God for my inner man. They can't do that. And so I can be a loving, respectful person apart from them. Even if they choose to walk out on the marriage, I don't have to become a hostile, contemptuous person because they betrayed me and disobeyed the vow they made before God. That's in the worst case scenario. And that's said in some ways in a philosophical sense. You know, there's got to be a lot of empathy when a person has been betrayed. My mother, you know, the pain that my mom went through. So again, those of you who are listening to us know that we're not here lacking empathy, but we're talking conceptually here. If you don't have the right ideas, you know, you're not going to end up being able to affect your heart. Your heart can't do this if your mind, first of all, hasn't locked into it as a truism, as an axiom, as a universal law of interpersonal dynamics. But once you come to that realization, then you begin to work on it, and you're going to blow it. I blow it. Jonathan blows it. We're not advocating perfection here, because that's not going to happen. But if we deny the truth here, then we're going to be victims, and we're going to be resentful, given that we end up being around irregular people. It's a simple principle. Mm-hmm. What about this next one? I need to own my responses, then ask God for help with Christ-likeness.
We will have many opportunities to respond to situations that seem unloving, unfair, unbelievable, and frustrating. In God's eyes, what He cares about is how we respond to what our spouse, friend, family member, or coworker has done. Our choice is how we respond. For me, I am responsible for me. My actions, my response. If there is a lack of God's love in my character and soul, I have to own up to it. Jesus, as always, is the greatest example. He was treated badly. They mocked Him, spread rumors about Him, told blatant lies about Him, and hated Him. Jesus said, "Father, forgive these people because they don't know what they are doing." Luke 23:24. If we say we have His mercy, His compassion, His forgiveness, His love, and His kindness, then we should show it to our spouse, friend, family member, or coworker. That our response is our responsibility may overwhelm us, but Jesus did come that we may have a helper.
Mm-hmm. Have a helper, yes, exactly. And that's where this man was leading up to, that at the end of the day, and he makes this point that we need to come to a point where we say, Lord, I agree with this truth. I agree with it. But I don't have it in my nature to love a person who hates me. I don't have it in my nature to put on respect towards someone who's not, you know, worthy of that respect. But Lord, you can help me with that. And that's how he describes Jesus does the Holy Spirit, the helper. And so again, one of the things that I do is I just say, Lord, you know that I'm not going to be able to do this. Given a certain situation, I'm going to come out fighting, swinging. I mean, I know it's within my heart to do some really bad things. And so I just acknowledge that part of me, but I give you permission to help me here. And I lock into this. I'm agreeing with this. I'm not going to fight this truth. And when I, get in an argument with Sarah or whatever, at the end of the day, I've got to come back and say, my response is my responsibility. You didn't cause me to be the way I am. You revealed the way I am. It's my issue. That doesn't mean that we don't go to people and confront them and point out things about them. We don't absolve them of wrongdoing. Forgiveness doesn't mean you let people go. It means you have a forgiving spirit while you accompany them to the jail. There isn't this turning a blind eye and deaf ear to immorality or illegality. We're talking about our inner response to these situations. Here's the question. Do I want to be frustrated or fulfilled? Read what this individual said.
I am the foremost to realize I react wrongly all the stinking time, and I hate it. But I've learned through our whole ordeal to repent quickly, turn from it, learn from it, and do my very best, with the grace of God alongside me, to change. The turning point for me came when I realized that regardless of what action my wife and others took, my response was my responsibility, and that until I could digest that and make it part of my approach to life and to marriage and offense, I was going to find myself more and more frustrated and unfulfilled. I pray all of us cherish this truth and make it part of our approach to every meaningful relationship in life.
Wow. Wow. Well, and that's the question I'm asking you who are listening. I mean, to what extent are you frustrated every day, all day? To what extent are you unfulfilled every day, all day? Now, you may have just been diagnosed with cancer or you just lost your mother. We're not talking about the grieving kind of a situation where you're just, kind of comatose because of the pain over this tragedy or that kind of thing. But we're talking about the general course of life. We're living life like everybody else is, but there's this deep-seated frustration, deep-seated lack of fulfillment. Then one of the challenges I'm extending to you is, could it be that you're simply not interpreting life through this phraseology, my response is my responsibility, and that people around me don't cause me to be the way I am, they reveal the way I am. And until we own up to that, then we're going to continue to be frustrated and unfulfilled because they're not behaving. Does this let the other person off the hook, which I referenced? Read what this husband said, very powerfully so.
He said, I'm old enough now and I've experienced enough pain to realize that my response is purely my responsibility. It doesn't mean that my wife doesn't need to make adjustments as well. It doesn't mean that my wife is perfect and always responds the right way either. It doesn't mean that my wife doesn't have things she needs to work on too. But at the end of the day, friends, our response is our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, people get this. I mean, this has been, and it really has been liberating to a whole lot of people over these last 15 years. And even before that, when I pastored, one of the things that people, that almost 20 years I was the senior pastor, they say, I still remember the phrase, my response is my responsibility. It governs my life. It governs our family. It governs our marriage. I mean, it's an amazing phrase and how it has really impacted people. But here he says, hey, look, this, you got to confront people and you got to, their response is their response. Responsibility. I mean, we're smart enough to realize they didn't respond well here, and their poor response is their responsibility. I'm not responsible for their response. It doesn't mean that I can hate them or have contempt. That's not the point. But at the end of the day, it's really liberating. I'm not responsible for Sarah's response, and Sarah's response isn't. She's not responsible for my response. And once two people lock into that, we'll do the dance. I try to justify myself and blame her. I mean, I'm very good at that. So, that's happening. But in the deepest recesses, we both know she didn't cause me to sin. That's for sure. That was my decision. We still confront others, but we do so, and here's a little additional point, with a responsible response. Read what that woman wrote about this idea of other people's sinful reactions.
She wrote, "If you are a Christian, think hard about the applications of this statement in your life. My response is my responsibility." She said, relating a story about her husband, "I love my husband. He's a pretty awesome guy. A few weeks ago, he told me about a situation at work where someone got in his face about an unwork-related issue and forcefully said unrespectful and unappreciated things to my husband. Obviously, something else was currently going on in the man's heart, and he just needed to vent, and my husband was there. My husband could have fiercely negated everything said, put the responsibility of the situation back on the man involved, and turned heel. He said everything in him wanted to. He had a right to yell back. He had an understandable right to make the dude look bad. Instead, he simply and calmly said, "I have never spoken to you in a disrespectful manner. I have always treated you professionally and with respect, and I ask that you do the same with me." The guy threw up his hands and walked away. Where my husband works, they see that he is a Christian. I read a great quote yesterday that one out of 100 people, one person will read the Bible, but 99 will read the Christian.
Mm. That's a great responsibility that falls on our shoulders, and it's unfair, but that's kind of how the world does. You say you're a Christian. Well, then, you know, they're going to be reading us more than they're reading the Bible. But some of us feel like, you know, we can't, you know, deal with these kinds of people. And this testimony illustrates, yeah, there are people are coming at us disrespectfully, but our response in that situation is still our responsibility. But it also means that you can confront. And what's interesting here, he was humble, truthful, and the man didn't know how to deal with that. I think the man walked away because in most cases, he'd just flare up and start screaming even more. He came under conviction, and the best he could do was walk away. And that says the guy was under conviction and knew that what was just spoken to him was correct, but he didn't want to confess or apologize. But this will change the temperature of that relationship, I predicted. Some people have a real difficult time. I remember in our neighborhood, Jonathan, one of the playmates in the neighborhood, something happened where he was offended, and I said to him, "Can you find in your heart to forgive us? We didn't mean to do that. Can you forgive us?" I don't think he'd ever heard that because he ran to his bike, got on it, and rode down the street. And he could not handle that. I still remember that vividly. That doesn't mean that we're ineffective in what we're saying. It could very well mean that we're extremely effective. They just haven't come to a point where they know how to deal with these situations, get humble, and make confession. But even so, that's a sidebar comment. Here the man was being attacked, this husband, and he responded this way very, very powerfully. Well, here's the challenge. Jonathan, let's end it with the tattoo.
One woman felt that this truth was so important, she needed to tattoo it on her forehead backwards, so every time she looked in the mirror, she read, "My response is my responsibility." Why might she have such an interest? Why should we? Because at the end of the day, no Nazi in my life can make me hate him. And that goes back to the story that you told in part
exactly.
One, right?
Exactly. Now, she didn't really put the tattoo backwards on her forehead, but when I read that, I just cracked up. I thought, wow. But she got it. And I think we need to have kind of invisible ink on our forehead, you know. And when we look in the mirror, we see my response is my responsibility. Let me just close in prayer, unless you have something else, Jonathan, afterwards, or do you have something on this topic that you wanted to add or question me on?
No, I think closing this two-part episode, and I hope people have kind of listened to both parts and share it with others. And so I think praying over this statement, this axiom, this truth about interpersonal relationships, as you put it, I think is important and hopefully healing for many people.
Lord, we just acknowledge that given certain situations, we don't have it in us to be a loving person who loves our enemy, who prays for those who persecute us, as your teaching was so clear about, to go the extra mile, to turn the other cheek, to give our cloak, to respond to the radicalness of your information. And yet, that's the call on our lives. But we know we can begin in some of the relationships where overall there's just basic goodwill in the company. I mean, it's not filled with evil-willed people. It's just irritating people. We're married to someone who's upsetting us. We have children who aren't responding to us. And we're not even suffering physically. We're not even being tested, but we're not doing well even in these situations. And it really leaves us without excuse. So we want to be the first to just confess, you know what, we are immature people, holding everybody else responsible for our reactions, our responses. And we want to make a decision today that we're going to stop that. We're just going to stop it. We're going to lock into this and realize, and we know we're vulnerable. We're not going to think about it when we should be thinking about it, but a half hour later we can think about it and we can go back and say, no, I was wrong for that response. And we just begin the work of this. And Lord, I am absolutely confident that this person who's listening is going to begin to realize that there is a freedom in their spirit, that suddenly they're going to begin to realize others aren't controlling them, that it's really their issue, and that they can find a happiness, an inward contentment, a restfulness, just a kind of a joy, because other people are not the ones you brought into their life to make them happy. What the key here is that our response is the key to our own internal freedom. So we'd all just again ask for your help, because we all know that we have limitations and inadequacies, and we don't know exactly what we're going to do tomorrow. So we all acknowledge your word, take heed who he thinks he stands, lest he fall. We are vulnerable, and yet we're not going to make any more excuses about this. We're going to make a decision to allow these irritants, these pressures, and these heated moments to bring out the inner properties. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Amen. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for your reviews, and thanks for sharing with others. Take care. Have a great week.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect Podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.